What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mates and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. It's the
booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and the Dreamin' JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Hurting it.
Hurting it.
Hurting it. Footy Prime, everyone. Why are you laughing? Nomadic dubs.
Hitting it.
We're oh, that's it. Why.
Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning. Foundational episode. Yeah, yes. That's Craig Forrest. That's Amy Walsh, Jimmy Brennan. I'm James Sharman. No Wonga today. No JC. JC's back from Mexico very shortly, but he's been editing the show from Mexico. That's a guy sacrificing his enjoyment for us. So we're very much appreciative, JC.
And he's been doing it wasted. Has anybody listened to his edits? Because I haven't.
No, I haven't actually. It could be interesting. He could be going rogue for all you know. Okay, so excuse me, I've got a bit of a cough, a bit of a summer cold, you know. What should we get to today? There's a few things to get to. We'll get to the Northern Super League later. Okay, Dubs.
No, I was going to say, kind of a big day yesterday, Sharms. Kind of a big day.
I want to save time for that, so not rushing through it. Okay. Chelsea, has it been confirmed yet they got Enzo Maresca? It's not been confirmed, has it? I don't think. I think they're still putting the dot on the T's and putting lines in the I's and stuff.
That's right? All like contact link. That's my dad piecing out.
Are you in jail?
Yeah. It's my dad going down the... Very exciting continental breakfast. I saw like contract length and stuff like that. If it's not finalized, it's pretty darn close.
You surprised by this? Took Leicester up from the championship, playing brilliant football. Very much, what was it? I read Dubs, a Pep acolyte.
That's right.
Which I love. See, I mean, I want to be an acolyte of someone and have someone who's an acolyte to me as well.
Well, there's a number of them now across world football, right?
One in Arsenal,
mm-hmm.
for example. Yeah, there's many acolytes. I guess to be an acolyte, do you have to work with the person or just believe in their methods?
Or just subscribe to their philosophy?
Yeah.
I think you have to have a direct connection with, like not mentor-mentee, but have, you know, have learned and applied your trade under the guidance of said person.
So they know each other's names. They won't just, in a hallway, they could pass by and would know each other. Wouldn't be just a polite nod.
No.
To be an acolyte, you must know each other.
It would be an embrace.
A warm embrace. Yeah, exactly.
Not
so
just
Jimmy,
high
for
five.
Example, Jimmy couldn't be a Pep acolyte because he might buy into his philosophy, but he doesn't know Pep. Mm. However, he could be a Sean Dyche acolyte. Jimmy?
That's true.
Who would you be an acolyte to? Is there someone in particular you'd be an acolyte to?
I don't know. I guess it could be any manager that you worked with, really, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody wants to play like Pep.
There's that as well.
Yeah. Vincent Kompany. There you go. You want to be 100%. Like him.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it seems like anybody that's worked at City under Pep seems to be getting these great jobs now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a valid point too, isn't it? It's like, yeah. No matter who you were, you could be the tea lady, but you could be a tea lady anywhere in the world. because you were a tea lady for Pep.
She could probably be a manager anywhere just because.
Yeah. Probably.
Hmm. If you are a Pep tea lady, though,
Dub, would a Pep tea lady be a different style of tea lady to, say, for example, you know, a Sean Dyche tea lady? I mean, Sean, that tea lady would be far more direct. Straight there, boom, your cup. Your cup right in front of you.
Here's your fucking tea.
There's your fucking tea. You better enjoy it.
I wonder if the tea lady, when she puts down the tea, is putting in formations.
Maybe.
The biscuits and formations.
You see, if you're Pep's tea lady, you're putting the tea in front of the person, there's going to be some milk to the side and the sugar to the side. Right? Yeah. But on any given day, that sugar could be to the right or the left. Or the milk I think to the left or the right.
She'll tuck them inside.
Depending on who she's serving, though, right?
Yeah.
Right. Some tea drinkers might want it more direct, in which case she's happy to be more direct. But generally speaking, she'll dictate how you have your tea.
Yeah.
Right. You want to be dictating how that person has to. You don't want to be dictated by.
Are you sure you move on from this?
No, I think you should stay with it. I think it's less about being dictated to and more about the ritualistic aspect of the tea. That it's an intricate process. There's many steps, and you have to master those steps in order to be the tea lady.
Is the steep of the tea the most important part of the tea, or is it mixed in with the milk?
It's the tea bag.
Hey, we used to have to, as youth players, make the tea. Hey, Jimmy used to have a big, huge pot. Grab a fistful of tea bags, just throw it in.
Now, that's interesting, Craig, because you got bigger hands than, say, the left back.
Thank you very much.
When you're putting the fist of tea bags in the tea pot, it's a stronger tea. Do people like you making the tea more so than the left back?
With Jimmy and small hands? Yeah, probably.
Or I just call you a carny.
I actually wasn't thinking of Jimmy when I said left back there. I just assumed that left backs have smaller hands than goalkeepers, which is probably generally true.
We make it quicker.
You'd be well suited to that system, wouldn't you, Jimmy? You have a history of playing in the middle of the park. There's comfort there.
Yeah.
Technically, tactically astute. Start in the wing and slide inside.
Drift inside.
Hide.
Sometimes we're happy that Wonger isn't here.
Yeah.
Honestly, I heard myself say it.
Back to the whole acolytes. So Jimmy, is there?
Oh no!
You muted yourself.
I think what he's trying to say about the accolades. Are you asking me about accolades or who I worked with?
First of all, are you saying accolade or acolyte?
Accolade.
Acolyte. What now?
So stupid. I would probably say. If I look back, I mean, I had a few really good individuals that I worked with. Joe Jordan was a big one. George Burley was quite good. I think Stax, you worked with Burley, didn't you?
Yeah. We were that was our only manager outside of international where we had the same manager, which is kind of interesting. Doesn't happen every day.
Yeah.
And where was that?
I had him at Southampton.
And he was at Ipswich. Took over from John Lyle. One of his first games was that 9-0er.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. The pregame was, they won't expect us to attack. Fucking was he ever right? 4-0 down after half an hour.
Yeah. But apparently, you know, going back to Chelsea and the manager search, I mean, obviously they've been watching Enzo, the lesser manager, for some time now. And they're loving the way that he plays and they feel that he can come in and make a difference for Chelsea. But, you know, it goes back to what we talked about before when that Chelsea job, it doesn't seem secure because of the turnover. And if you're him and you're in a good position with Leicester, you got ownership, they'd probably spend a little bit of money. Would you fancy that Chelsea job? I don't know if I would.
Everybody takes it because of the money.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. They know what's coming, but when they get fired, I mean, you're going to get a big payoff one way or the other. I still can't believe Pochettino's gone, considering how the end of the season. It's a strange old world, football.
And even stranger if you're in Chelsea, right?
Yeah.
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 You got Vincent Kompany going from Burnley to Bayern Munich. I mean, jeez.
This summer promises to be the craziest managerial shuffling summer maybe ever, doesn't it? And it began already with Kompany going to Bayern Munich and Poch leaving. And the whole Ten Hag situation. He's being hung out to dry right now. What is taking so long? Surely the process, Jimmy, began before the season ended?
I think so. But, I mean, I'm laughing because Forrest and I were talking yesterday and we were talking about Vincent Kompany. And we were like, imagine his agent calls him at the end of the season and be like, oh, well done. You know, you got relegated. You know, your team put up a good fight. And then all of a sudden he goes, but it's all right. We got Bayern Munich who wants you. The Kompany must have went, yeah, all right, fuck off. I just got relegated.
Yeah, like they're just winding him up, right?
Yeah, this is a wind-up. No, we're flying out tomorrow. He must have been sitting there going, if this is a piss take, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, the last gaffer, Sean Dyche, kept him up for 10 years and then got relegated. And then Everton, he kept them up. And then they had a 10-point or points deduction. I don't know, I can't remember exactly what it was. Then they stayed up again.
Yeah.
He's never been in the question. In the conversation for Bayern Munich. It's very strange. And then you got one of the feel-good stories, we hope anyway, Kieran McKenna at Ipswich Town. Lots of talk about him potentially going to Chelsea and going to Manchester United, and there's still isn't confirmation, but it looks as though they're just finishing off the contract. He will stay at Ipswich Town, which is refreshing, I have to say. Refreshing.
Didn't you say the ownership group flew over to meet him? Because they wanted to secure him quickly.
Yeah, long-term contract, so... Good for him. Good for him. Good for Ipswich.
He played it beautifully, didn't he? Really? I'm sure he was really happy to have those connections with Chelsea and United and say, yeah, let's just, I won't dismiss them because that's going to arouse some concern at the head offices. And it's worked beautifully for him. And quite honestly, Craig, I mean, at this point, we understand Ipswich is not a small club by any stretch, but compared to the Chelsea's and the United's, it's small. But it's got stability. He knows the club really well. That's got to weigh in a lot compared to going to a place like Chelsea or United, where, I mean, these are tough clubs to manage at. We know that. And forget the firing and how they get through managers so quickly. But just have that stability and know what you have, as opposed to jumping into the great unknown in this murky abyss that is that type of club. I understand why he'd stay for another year or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. It's just from... a person's standpoint and where the players have been and where they're at now. And if he was to abandon that, I think that would be incredibly disappointing for the group of men that he's been dealing with and how well he's dealt with that. And there's probably some conversations around there and some promises and things like this that you talk about with players. And he wants to finish off the job as much as they're looking after him financially. It's not what he would get in one of the massive clubs, of course, but it is that stability and an opportunity to do something with this squad that is really, really special. And that would be finish 17th or above.
Yeah.
2 years ago or less than that, these players were third tier players.
Yeah. Do you know what I like is that he's shown some loyalty, but not so much, the club and the fans, but he showed loyalty to himself and the project that he has. And to go from two tiers below, move him up again, get into the Premier League, I like that because it's a project that he's put together. He's molded it himself, and he's going to see how far he can get with it. I think it's brilliant because far too often you see a manager put something in place, and then as soon as something better comes along, they're gone. And a manager like McKenna, you hope that he has success now because he's sticking with it.
Mm-hmm. It's counterculture in a way, right?
Yeah.
It's almost badass as a move because you've got the investment by him and the loyalty, as you astutely pointed out, to himself, to his career, to stick with the project, but also his commitment to the players. But then you've got it reciprocated by the club.
Yeah.
And everybody's in it together. And that's a powerful thing.
I agree.
Unless, of course, it's a Graham Potter situation, right? Where he leaves mid-season. Something comes up mid-season. And he jumps ship. Because at some point, I mean, in that contract, I mean, listen, Ipswich, say it's a, I don't know, say it's a four-year deal, Craig. I doubt they anticipate he'll be there for 4 years. If everything goes right. There's got to be, if not a clause or, you know, something in there that allows him to jump ship if the right opportunity comes around. Maybe not this year, but next summer. Oh, which would be fine, right?
Absolutely. You look at any of the managers, if they're looking 5 years ahead, chances are they're not going to be at the club they're at right now. It's just the nature of that business.
To the whole Vincent Kompany thing once again, as a footballer, you guys can speak to this. I mean, how much does it count for the warden's coming by? There we go.
Is that breakfast being served?
It's not Big Bubba, your new cellmate, is it?
It's just the return of Chris Walsh. That's it.
Hold my Walsh
in the house. Let's get some Walsh girl stories from Chris Walsh and the podcast.
Yeah. Oh no, let's not. Let's not.
Now we know where Amy gets it from.
Not so subtle. Door slamming true. Or opinions. She ain't so subtle, the Walshes.
Yeah.
So sorry, back to the Kompany thing. So as footballers, does the fact that someone had a glorious playing career count for much in that room when he steps or she steps into that room as a coach? Or is it all about show me what you got on the training pitch before I buy into your methods?
Oh, I think they have a step up for sure. There's definitely a respect from the players for somebody like Vincent Kompany. So, yeah, I think what the problem is at Bayern Munich is they have problems in the dressing room and they need somebody to sort that out and almost be a bit of a player's manager to try and sort what's going on there in the last few years. Doesn't sound great. And the expectations are obviously incredibly high at Bayern Munich. Christ, you can be successful there and still get fired. So,
yeah, exactly. Happened more than once, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Going back to your question, Sharms, and I don't have an example from my playing career, but I think if I were to put myself in the shoes or in the boots of the players in that room, and you go in and somebody has had a legendary or a very accomplished playing career, then they've stepped into the coaching role, that instantly gives you respect and credibility. However, if you fail to meet it on the pitch and even that first training session or like the first impression, then the fall from grace is even greater because you've been held up and the expectations are higher. And if you fail to meet them, then you don't have the buy-in at all. Far from it.
Is that the case with Mo Johnston, Jimmy? I mean, obviously, as someone that grew up in the UK, you guys played, you knew who Mo Johnston was. He was, you know, he's a legend over there. I'm not sure all the players in that room knew of his past. Obviously, he has success within MLS.
Yeah. Look,
did he buy in because of who he was?
Look, for me, Sharms, you know, a lot of people think that, oh, you don't have to play to be a manager, to coach. And a lot of the time it's people that have never been in the game that always tend to say that. Mo Johnson's come in and his background, his pedigree, the way that he sees the game was off the chart, off the chart. And what I think Mojo needed was he needed a couple of good people around him that could take his message and implement that on the training pitch. Now, there's a lot of times where a player will finish and then go into coaching right away. And it takes a little bit of time to understand how do I get this message that's in my head, this philosophy, all this knowledge, and put this out onto a training pitch. And that takes time because it's a coaching method that you need to understand. Right. And I don't think he went through it the proper way, but if he did go through it the proper way and work with people and had his coaching education where he learned how to put a good session on, I think it would have been completely different. And that's the problem sometimes is that these individuals have great knowledge, but just don't know how to portray it onto that pitch. And when they do understand how to do it, then it's a completely different ballgame, like a Pep Guardiola, who's got all this knowledge, but now understands this is how I can put this out into a training session and get the best out of these players. And it takes a little bit of time. And that's why I think a lot of coaches, which I firmly believe, is that you don't retire, go straight into it. I think you've got to learn what it means to be a coach. And especially when you work with the younger age groups, because you can make mistakes. You're learning your trade. You're learning that when you stand up in front of people, everybody's listening to what you say. And you can make the mistakes at the younger age groups. In the older age groups, to what Dubs is saying, you can't make mistakes because players are trying to figure you out all the time. And so you've got to be bang on and make sure that that message, when it's being preached, it's being understood and taken in.
This is why a lot of the qualifications that you get from FIFA and whatnot, these people that are taking these sessions are teachers or educators, because they have the ability to get the message across. And these great players, I mean, I was under Ruud Gullit at Chelsea. He has no understanding of coaching players that don't actually get it. His own entire life, going back to when he was in Holland PSV, there's an understanding that it's at a different level, and they don't get it when they get to a point where, holy shit, this player doesn't have a clue where to run, where their positioning is, and how do they coach that. Mo found that difficult, and a lot of the great players do find it difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, to bring it.
Sorry, but even like for me, some of the best managers in the world were high profile players as well. But they've taken the time to really understand how to get that message out and how to coach properly. If you look at Ancelotti, look at Zidane, look at Pep, you know, Klopp, like all these managers have played a decent level and have had success. And now they're actually taking the time to understand how to coach now. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful knowledge, because when you walk into a room and you've got an individual that's played at the highest level who understands what it takes to win, and now all of a sudden they're teaching you and understanding how to teach properly. As a footballer, fuck, that's what I want. I want to learn off of these guys.
Yeah, but it's beautiful knowledge on paper if you don't know how to impart that knowledge, right? It's all fine and good in theory, but if you can't be a great communicator and tell people, players, how it's going to work for them and how they fit within it, then it's very difficult. And I think to bring it back to Maresca, I was reading that article that you put on the dark web, Sharms, and it was very heavy handed with the chess analogies. And I was like, all right, like let's go now. Can we move beyond this? Like, we got he's playing chess and everybody else is playing checkers, and like ad nauseum, a bunch of other ones. But I thought it was interesting talking about his time. It may have been a different article talking about Maresca with Leicester, and how a lot of the guys, when he first arrived, and he spends a lot of time on video, he spends a lot of time on the tactics. Of course, the physical preparation is essential, but he really lets the guys know what the why is. But it took them a long time to understand it, where guys were looking around, they're like, how did I not know this stuff? But he didn't make them feel stupid. He didn't say like how do you not know this? It was collaborative. It's like, everybody's in this together. I will look better if you guys understand this and are able to execute it. And everybody needs to gain an understanding of everybody's role within the system so that we can put it into place. And then it's laughable to me, like reading some of the reactions from Chelsea fans saying that it's going to be boring football and this isn't what Chelsea needs. But I mean, I think you look at their players and what they were able to do towards the end of the season, a very uneven one, as we've talked about before. We're surprised that Poch leaves. But you get a guy in who's, regardless if they concede the first two goals, are going to set up and play the exact same kind of football. There's something that, I don't know, is comforting in that as a footballer, that you have your identity and you're going to stick with it. Of course, you're going to make adjustments given in-game moments and things like that. But there's a confidence in the project and what you're doing and the playing philosophy. And that can take you quite far. So I'm curious to see what that pairing will do for them next year.
I think it would be good, because you think when he started his coaching career as well, he actually went into the academy. And when you go into the academy, you have to really pay attention to detail, but you also have to really go back down to basics and teach every individual, you know, specifics, because that's that learning phase. So he's evolving as a coach. Then he went to Parma, and then he went to Leicester. But he can relate, and he can actually dumb it down, because he had to, because that's where he learned in the academy. And when he's going with this Chelsea team, now you've got a young bunch of kids that are playing. he'll be able to relate to them and think, you know, I can't speak to them the way I can to a 30-year-old. I got to break it down a little bit more for these younger players to really get them to understand. And he'll know how to do that. So that's why for me, it's always important to go into an academy first, because you really have to go down to the basics and then work your way back up, because then you can, you've got a different approach now when you're in the dressing room.
Do you find that, Jimmy, now working with U17s, that you're doing that? Like, I find that just in no matter what I'm doing, whether it's media, when I was teaching yoga or even playing, like you get to a point, and perhaps it's with age as well, that you have to have this beginner's mind, because I think the more that you know, the more knowledge that you accrue, the more you realize you don't know everything.
No.
And like that mindset is key in order to teach.
Yeah.
You can't assume that you know everything. So is there a return for you to kind of basic principles of play and basics that's helping you as a coach as well as helping the players?
Well, it does, because, you know, when I was at TFC and I retired and then I got into coaching, you know, they asked at first, you want to get into the first team? And I was like, no, I'm not ready. I need to understand, you know, how to coach. And when I went to the U17s, I loved it, because I remember my first couple of training sessions, I was expecting them to do what I would do in a training session. And then you start to realize, and you've got to be very, very open-minded as a coach as well. And the minute you think you know it all, you're finished. And then I realized I can't coach like this, and I can't teach these kids the way that I would a first team player. I have to really kind of go back to the beginning, where when you receive the ball, open up your hips, look over your shoulder, good firm pass. And that's the way you end up starting to teach these young players. And it actually opens up your
perspective.
More or less, I think, no, not your perspective, your knowledge and experience of coaching, right? Because now you're thinking, okay, now I've got the basics. I know how to coach a 29-year-old. I know how to coach a 17-year-old, a 20-year-old, because everybody's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So, I firmly believe that you should do when you retire. And if you want to get in coaching, go coach the younger players first and really understand what coaching means and how to do it and how to understand players.
Mm-hmm. It's like Marty St. Louis coaching his kids in Pee Wee and then getting the head coaching job for the Habs. I know you're all thrilled that I found a way to bring the Habs into this conversation. But I mean, and he, for a while, that was a knock against him.
Yeah.
But if you have ideas, you have a philosophy, it doesn't really matter what age the players are. I don't think, as long as you're able to communicate it and you firmly believe in it. And then one more example from Montreal, when Thierry Henry was here, that was pre my time with the club, but there's a great video that you can YouTube, and he's very demonstrative on the sideline, and he's frustrated, wants guys to play. And I'm not saying that's where he is now as a coach or that he hasn't evolved, but I think sometimes, to go back to Sharms's question about ex players, you have a certain pedigree, you've had success as a player, and you move into coaching. One, it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to be a good coach and a good communicator, but I think you sometimes get too narrow in your vision and your approach, relating it back to yourself of what you think you should do or what you've done, instead of having a wider and a broader scope of how to teach and letting the players express themselves within that.
Yeah. See, but I disagree with you a little bit, because I think age does matter. And it does, because if I'm coaching you and you're 28 years old, you've got bad habits. You'll have bad habits.
And but maybe you just haven't played under that system before. You haven't been exposed to it.
No, I mean bad habits, maybe technically, or the way that you read or see the game. So for me now, and I'm going to try to talk to you, and you've got maybe 300 games under your belt. Now, I'm going to try to teach you how to get rid of these bad habits and teach you different ways that I would have taught the younger players, because I can, those younger players don't have bad habits. So I can teach them the proper techniques of what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's your approach and understanding and how I'm going to communicate with you now that's going to get you out of those bad habits and try to help you and encourage you to improve your game. So everybody's different. So that's what I mean with the younger age group. They're like sponges. The older, they're more stubborn, set in their ways. And it's, how do I figure these guys out where I can actually help them with their bad habits and improve them as a player?
Good conversation. It's interesting, isn't it? It's so rare that you get like a star player becoming a great coach. And to Craig's point, though, you get educators now, teachers taking their badges, people that perhaps didn't come from the football world. You see what they're doing that for. I'd love to see a documentary about ex-Premier League footballers becoming elementary school teachers. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Learn that. If you can herd, like I say, if you can herd children, you can organize adults, right? Because they're way more frustrating.
I think if ex-athletes did it, they'd be in the gym or outside a lot.
Probably.
I don't know why, but my mind, when you proposed that scenario, I thought of Kindergarten Cop.
It's not a tumor?
Yeah. It's not a tumor.
One of the greatest cinematic triumphs of all time. Kindergarten Cop, second only to Twins. Also brilliant. Also had a child in it. Oh, no, that's Danny DeVito. Sorry.
Bad same, habits.
Same height.
Bad at the fundamentals.
What up, Primers? It's JC, that guy. Don't miss a second of Premier League action only on FuboTV. Subscribe at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. With Serie A, League One, and One Soccer 2, you can get it all at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. Now, back to the show.
Hey, did you see Greenland has applied to join CONCACAF? They've actually applied, officially applied, yeah. They want to play football, and so they should. Should be allowed to. Imagine that travel.
Imagine how freezing it would be, those games.
Yeah, at least you might see Santa in the crowd. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, but
I don't want to go into Europe.
They're part of the Kingdom of Denmark. And then they're going to be playing in CONCACAF. But right now, they only play friendlies, but they're not classified as international games. Mm-hmm. So how do you get sanctioned in CONCACAF? Well, saying that Guyana is part of South America and they're in CONCACAF.
Yeah.
Well, and you got Martinique, these other protectors.
Yeah.
That aren't Jimmy, part did of you, that did you, FIFA, but they compete in CONCACAF. It's strange.
Yeah, they compete, but they can't go to a World Cup.
Right.
Right. Did you read that story, Jimmy, or do you actually just have that knowledge sitting there about
Greenland? He's got an article in front of him.
He read it for sure. He had no fucking clue.
he referred to Denmark as the Kingdom of Denmark. He's reading from an article.
It is. You guys underestimate me sometimes. It is actually the Kingdom of Denmark.
No, it is, yeah.
I know.
When's the last time you heard it referred to as such? Come on.
What do they Let use, me ask you this. Who is the King
Euro,
of Denmark?
In Denmark, do they, or in Greenland, do they use euros or do they use dollars? What's their currency?
That's a good point.
In Greenland?
They use reindeers.
They use greenbacks, obviously.
The greenbacks, yeah.
If it's a queen, though, wouldn't it be a queendom? I don't know. I'm just like throwing it out there, right?
For sure.
It should be.
Seems pretty sexist to me.
I agree.
Someone out there will let us know. Speaking of sexism and the lack thereof, we're making progress. It's official, Dubs. The Northern Super League, finally no more Project 8. Although it kind of grew on me, Project 8.
I like Somehow that. You managed to make that backhanded. Finally, no more Project 8.
You know what I mean? Because I've been waiting for this name for how long now? The NSL, mm-hmm. The Northern Super League. Okay, let me read the on the press release. The vibrant Aurora Borealis inspired the league color palette, and the serpentine style font symbolizes dynamic team play on the pitch. The four-pointed North Star finally signifies the league's strength, vision, and steadfast presence to cement itself as a beacon for what sport can and should be in Canada and beyond.
Wow.
Love it.
Love that. Nice.
I love the name. I like the name. I think it's brilliant. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
They nailed it.
I agree.
No soccer, no women, no Canada in there, mm-hmm. Which I think is smart. It's a very much a removal from what we're used to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Standalone.
I read on Twitter this some individual was complaining why they called it Northern when actually Southern Ontario is lower than a lot of the states. Are people stupid or what?
People overthink things. Just because it's the Northern doesn't mean that it's the most Northern.
They're like, what do you mean Northern? Like, what? Shut up.
Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
I think when people think North, they think Canada, right?
I think so. As you know, geographically incorrect as it might be in some cases, it is still North.
Yeah. I mean, right? If you're in Florida, you say north.
Yeah, it's not the farthest north Super no, League. It's
exactly. Exactly. It's just the Northern Super League is fine.
North-ish.
You're never going to satisfy everyone, ever.
No.
You're just not.
But you can have a laugh at the stupid comments.
Yeah, you can.
Oh, you have
remember
to.
Remember when the Premier League was born, guys, you know, and it used to be from the old First Division? My God, the response. Yeah. Thank God there's no social media back then.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Premier League. What the hell is that?
Called sounds American. Premiership.
Premiership, that's right. It was, yeah, the Barclays Premiership, wasn't it? Yeah. But anyway, Dubs, yeah, listen, this is a huge moment, obviously, for the game. Six clubs have been announced. How proud were you yesterday when you finally saw it there? You knew about this stuff. You've been holding this back from us for months. Months.
I have. I've been sitting on a lot of the info. But no, it was huge. The Montreal franchise press release went out really early on in the morning, and then I knew that announcement was coming on in the afternoon with Dee at the ESPNW summit in Toronto, and then Ottawa announced as the remaining franchise. So just a huge day. I think I was just buzzing and really happy and emotional about it, that it's kind of finally out there and we can talk about it. But it's massive. It's massive for the next generation. There was also videos of Dee presenting prior to the public announcement to the Canadian Women's National Team players who are already in Montreal for the game that's coming up on Saturday against Mexico. And they've been huge advocates and proponents for a domestic pro league. You remember the last Women's World Cup, it was only Canada and Haiti. Yeah. Two nations out of 32 didn't have a domestic pro league. So we're late to the party, but instantly we're going to set high standards in terms of the league and what's offered to the players in terms of professionalism. And it's going to have a huge, huge impact. So I'm so pleased. I'm so proud. And it's just capitalizing and riding the wave of momentum of women's sports, women's pro sports in this country. So with the success that PWHL has had, with the announcement of the NBA or the WNBA franchise in Toronto, and now Northern Super League, it's huge. We're finally here, and it's just the beginning. So it's very, very cool.
Dubs, all the cities are in place right now. How about the venues? Have they been confirmed, or is there still the search on?
Of the two that were announced yesterday, it's still question marks. So we're still storing that out in Montreal. They talked about in the press release that it would likely be like a shared venue, maybe bigger games played at Stade Saputo, Université de Montréal's set up there called Sepsum, or Claude Robillard, where we saw CS Saint-Laurent play TFC. Those are the types of soccer infrastructure that we've got at our disposal that probably you move around and rotate a little bit. And then Ottawa, I think, is the biggest question mark out of all the six in terms of where they're going to play. So we've talked about that before. That's the biggest challenge, I think. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hopefully there's more of a push and a concerted effort, I think, from CPL, potential partnerships in the future with Northern Super League to build something that's the right number in terms of capacity, so that when it's filled, it's stuffed to the gill, it feels like a full stadium, and you've got some grass. I think that's really important for the growth of the game in our country.
She scores bangers, some scoops here. NSL won't have a draft system like we see in the NWSL, and it will be implementing a two-way trade system, which requires agreement from the players. A club source tells She Scores Bangers they see the standard trade system as brutal and would not cater to the player or league's best interests. Ooh, I like that. That's a different spin on it. Player power. Is that a big part of this, Dubs? Player power?
Yeah, and agency, right? That's another reason why you come. And I think it's straddling both worlds. And Diana spoke about this in some of her media availability, where you have the influence of North American sports and its existing model of the draft system of franchises versus sort of historical anchoring in terms of the club history and all that on your side of world football. And can you kind of bridge the two? But I think it's so important in women's sport, where you started early on, the standards weren't there. It was called professional, but it wasn't really that in terms of how you were supported, the resources given. You know, you're still seeing the paradox in women's sport with the immense growth the exponential growth of the game on the international stage, but also domestically. And then you see the men's World Cup winners in Argentina, and they can all only offer their women's team a ham and cheese sandwich and a banana. You know, so there's this situation where you constantly have to deal with it as a women's footballer. So this angle means that you can't get moved out. And yes, you're a commodity as a professional athlete. I think you're that regardless of where you play, but you give these players more agency and more say on where they want to play.
Isn't that going to backfire though, honestly? I love the concept. It's nice mm-hmm. on paper, but the reality is when it comes to pro sports, it can be ruthless. You mm-hmm. need to change and develop your team. A team that's struggling needs to make trades that perhaps doesn't cater to the individual, but it's better for the club. Doesn't that give players too much power?
I mean, I think if you look at what happens if a player falls out of favor and they just languish, they languish on the bench. You know, they get buried in the roster. So better for all of the teams. It's a small league. There's six. I'm sure that there's another team that might need that player's service. I don't know if it's about tipping the power from a coach's standpoint versus a player's standpoint. I think it's just, you know, giving these players that they finally have a place to play. Let's make sure that more players are getting in there and playing instead of not being utilized.
I mean, in fairness, it's no different, right, Craig, to Europe, right, where a player has the right to say no because they've got to renegotiate their contract. If you transfer, I know it's a trade, you transfer a player from player team A to team B, if the player won't negotiate a new deal with that club, it's not going to happen. So I guess mm-hmm. there is player power to a degree in Europe, certainly. It's different in the NWSL, I imagine, and in MLS.
Yeah, it's different. I remember back in the day when players weren't making a gazillion bucks, they would, if they fell out with you, the manager, he'd let you rot in the youth team. They'd literally say it. We'll put you in the youth team and rot for 2 years and you're going to be worth nothing. Mm. Completely different. You had no power whatsoever as a player. Yeah. So it has changed a little bit. Better for the player. Not so much, I don't think, that it's better for the system, because I actually believed in that system before the free agency, but it is what it is.
The players' union helped with that as well, Stacks.
Mm-hmm.
Stopping all that nonsense where, you know, players were getting eight-balled and told to train in other dress rooms and go train on their own. And so that helped big time. But I think as well with this league, it's very, very important that there is parity through the get-go. You don't want a couple of teams struggling because they can't get the players or can't attract players. So it is important that the league overlooks that to make sure that there is parity. The top players are in certain markets, and because you want the games to be competitive. You don't want one or two teams running away with it and the rest are struggling. It just doesn't look good. You want it to be competitive from the get-go.
Well, look at PWHL, right? Montreal and Toronto, good teams, didn't make it to the final in the end, which mm-hmm. I think probably wasn't ideal from a TV standpoint, Minnesota and Boston getting in there, but there was competitive balance throughout, right? So I guess, you know, that's what they're looking for in this league as well. It's huge. I mean, what's next step, I guess, is filling out. When will rosters dubs be built? Obviously, it's not till next year. I imagine at the moment, contracts are being looked at. The great video we saw from the Canada women's team, their camp, and, you know, Diana presented to them, and they all got hats and stuff, and they all look pumped. I looked around that room, and there's a lot of players on good contracts in Europe and NWSL. Mm-hmm. Do they think they can recruit many of those players? Do you think there's a desire at this point for those players? It's a decent cap, 1.5 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's what you want to do. You want to make it attractive to players who are under existing contracts or contracts that are lapsing or coming up to term to bring them back to Canada. So 150 plus Canadians, are you going to attract those marquee players who are in that setup with Bev Priestman currently in camp? I think that's unrealistic to think that you're going to get a number of those on each of the six franchises. But maybe you get players who are in the twilight of their careers and have a desire to come back home, you know, in a market that's near where they grew up. Or you have the more youthful players who are maybe in NCAA or have played a year or two. You bring them back home, and then you have the option there of having a more professional setup. And that's been the challenge. Like at these U20 World Cups that I've covered, is you're looking down the rosters and you're looking at Canadians who almost the entirety of that roster are in the NCAA setup where they're playing 3 and 4 competitive months of year of soccer versus a professional setup where they're day in, day out, every single day being tested. And it's hard to compete. So can you provide that immediately? I'm not sure that you can, but I just think giving players that option is huge. You know, I think you cast a wide net in terms of Canada. So you players who have not been in Bev Priestman's rosters or the youth rosters or on anybody's radar in terms of the scouting. We talked about the limitations in terms of the scouting and the recruitment in Canada. Do we have the resources to do it properly? Yeah. But now all of a sudden you build a more robust pipeline and give these players a chance who post-university never had a chance to play. So do you get some of those big name players? I think you probably get a couple, but you also get to know some players who perhaps have been toiling in lesser leagues overseas, and you get them to come back and play. Or you get players that you never even knew existed because of a certain narrow-mindedness of player profile or looking for a specific type of physicality, and this player didn't fit into that mold. And now all of a sudden you discover them because you have a women's professional league. Yeah. Like it's fucking huge. I'm so excited and I'm kind of emotional about it. Like I can't even imagine if like 10 years ago we had that and what that would have meant. Not only on the national team, because that's Charles, are you okay?
Sorry, I'm
good. Not only on the national team.
Do you want to mute your mic?
I can't reach it. That's a problem.
Not only on the national team, because the national team does stand to benefit, right? Get like a bump in terms of quality and performance, because there's more competition coming up underneath to push these players, right? But it's that looking at U sports. Can we recruit from there? Not just the 3 NDCs, which will continue to push players on and NCAA and all of that. But I think it's about making across the country options for players to go play professionally. It's so cool, and I'm so excited about it.
Do you find that, or do you think that the league is going to be relatively young player-wise? Because, I mean, you've got a year now. There's going to be a lot of players that are over in Europe that are under contract that probably have maybe another year or two before they're actually out of contract, where they'll be able to jump ship and come back to Canada. And going back to the NCAA, there's a lot of players that are first, second year that's going to be hard for them to come back into play in the league. So would you be looking for players, say, in maybe League One or just that 18, 19-year-olds that are looking to make that jump into the pro game?
Yeah, I think it probably skews a little bit younger to begin with. And is that by design? Probably not, but I think it's what you end up with, like to Sharms' question about roster construction. Yeah. You know, teams who are announced early on have a jump. They have a leg up on the franchises that were just announced in terms of their rosters and players that they have an eye on. But you'll probably hear some player announcements start to trickle out in the next couple of months. And then by the fall, I mean, it's next February probably, right? It's preseason and first kick of the ball is going to be April 2025. It's, oh yeah, it's like you need to get started like yesterday, weeks ago, months ago. And a team like Vancouver was one of the first to be announced. They've got a head start. They absolutely do. But I think if you look across the country and the players who are available, like you're saying, in League One at those NDCs, there's a tremendous amount of talent available. So it probably does skew a little bit younger to begin with.
Yeah. Do you think Christine Sinclair's got anything left in the tank?
I think all three of you asked a question at the same time.
Yeah, Craig's way out of time here, but Craig, that's my question as well. Sinky, can they convince her? I mean, she was very visible to start with. They used her in the promo video as well. I haven't seen her talk much about it since.
Yeah, she's still an advisor for Northern Super League now, and she signed a one-year deal to continue her professional career in Portland, and she's getting a chance now to play with Jesse Fleming and Janine Becky. And still doing well. So, I mean, I think for Sink, she's always talked about what it means to play at home. You know, those rare home games that you get as a national team player. So I don't think you'd have to do a tremendous amount of convincing to get her to play for Whitecaps. But it was noted by Steph Labbe that they are going to rebrand and it's going to be a new name for the women's team.
For which team, sorry? The women's team.
For Vancouver in a Northern Super
League. Oh, Vancouver. Yeah, yeah. No Whitecaps. That's right. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I heard that as well. All right. Well, listen, we're out of time. But yeah, we'll obviously follow this very closely. We'll talk about it as also at our event on June the 6th at Nickel 9 Distillery. Tickets available at wearefootyprime.com. Come join the gang. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks, everyone. We have to record Box to Box now, our MLS podcast coming up later today as well. Like us, follow us, subscribe to us and all our channels, including YouTube, of course. We release videos there several times a week. So until next time, thanks, gang. This has been a foundational episode of We Are Footy Prime. Cheers for listening.
Cheers for listening.
I don't know.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by Fubo TV. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @footy_prime and on Instagram at @footyprimeig. And visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Hey, it's Chris Walsh.
he can't hear you because I've got my headphones in.
All right, cool. Thanks, Dubs.
All right. Bye, guys.
See you later. All right, Jimmy, you go jump.
Tell me to press the end recording, I guess.
Yeah, end recording.
End recording.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime, the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening and back to the show. Oh.